some usage rules are more useful than others. John Dryden was a celebrated 17th century English playwright, poet, and literary critic who cared deeply about the details of language and about who was regulating the language. In the 1660s, he chaired a committee that met to propose a language academy modeled after the Académie Française in France. The proposal came to naught, but Dryden left his mark on usage, given that he was one of the first to publicly disparage the preposition stranded at the end of a sentence. His sense that Latin grammar was superior to English grammar may have had a hand here, as Latin grammar does not allow stranded prepositions. In the 1600s and 1700s, some grammarians rightly pointed out that English grammar sometimes naturally and even elegantly strands prepositions. But two highly influential grammarians in the 18th century picked up this language peeve and managed to solidify it as a rule. So for over 200 years, we were stuck with the idea that there was something wrong with ending a sentence with a preposition. This rule is so entrenched that it made newspaper headlines in 2024 when Merriam-Webster posted online that it was okay to end a sentence with a preposition. To quote an earlier grammarian, ending a sentence with a preposition, quote, is an idiom which our language is strongly inclined to. Did you hear the joke there with the stranded preposition? So that is an example of a usage rule handed down generation to generation that originated in a language peeve shared by a few influential writers and that has never been especially helpful in terms of crafting elegant or clear prose. Sometimes the sentence sounds better with the preposition at the end, just like sometimes the phrasing sounds better with a split infinitive. What do I mean? It can work well to put the adverb right next to the verb it modifies, such that we might write, to safely shift gears on the bike, shift before a hill becomes steep. To safely shift. The word not often effectively plunks itself down between the to and the verb. To not understand, to not sleep. That said, there is a helpful kernel of advice in the traditional rule about not splitting infinitives. It can be effective in writing not to put too many words, say 7 or 8, between the to and the verb. As I noted earlier, the rule about not dangling or misplacing modifiers can help minimize ambiguity in writing, which is helpful. It's not that a misplaced modifier is grammatically wrong per se, the grammar allows it, but it may create unwanted ambiguity. The Oxford comma can also usefully minimize ambiguity in a written list. In contrast, the idea that there is and should be a clear distinction between that and which has never been well-founded, and the earliest grammarians to propose the distinction even knew that. I wish someone had told the creators of the grammar checkers on our computers. I recognize that in legal writing at this point, there is a distinction between the two that provides a technical distinction between restrictive and non-restrictive relative clauses, which is fine. The rest of us can manage with a pause in speech and a comma in writing. No one ever told me in school that I could ask the question, says who, about the rules and judgments about language I was hearing from my mother and learning from English teachers. The rules come alive when we learn about the people who created them and talk about whether and when they are useful. In my experience as a teacher for over 3 decades, students do not dismiss usage rules once they realize the human hands behind them. Instead, they feel authorized to make decisions as writers and speakers about which rules they want to follow, well-founded or not, in a given context, for a specific audience who may come with particular beliefs about correctness.